Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'll be your host for this one. And joining me here in his own kitchen is Tony Kerr.
Hey.
How's it going, Tone?
Yeah, good, thanks.
You ready for this? All set to go?
Yeah, as ready as I'll be.
I've come round your gaff to record, as always. We agreed to meet at 1:30. You text me this morning to say, can we make it more like 1:15? You text me later to say, can we make it more like 1? And then at 10 to 1, you text me and say, actually, can we make it more like 1:30? So yeah. Here I am at 1:49, and we're about to start recording.
Just like to keep you guessing, really.
So it's all going well so far. But
we've made it.
We have made it, and it's great to be here to talk about cricket. Got a lot to talk about this week, haven't we? T20 World Cup, World T20, T20 World Cup, which is it? No one seems to know. All the commentators keep saying World T20. I'm not sure that name change has really stuck, has it?
No.
It's not just me that can't get it right.
Well, I'm pretty sure I've argued vehemently on this pod before that it should just be the T20 World Cup. But now I'm a World T20 man, I think.
So when it was a World T20, you argued that it should be T20 World Cup.
Yeah, exactly. But to be fair, it makes sense that the World Cup is the World Cup and the World T20 is the World T20. So.
Right. Not that you're contrary.
No, so, but I do think that, yeah.
I've been involved in debates with who's turned around and said, hang on, what did I argue last time we talked about this? So that's where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, the World T20 World Cup, we need to talk about that because it has finished, Tony, and we have a champion. I'm saying this like people might not know. Spoiler alert, it's Australia. So we're going to talk about that in a bit. But this is a little bit of a gear change after our very kind of bouncy, jolly opening. But we just wanted to up top talk about the big story in cricket at the moment, which has nothing to do with the T20 World Cup, which is of course Azeem Rafiq and the racism fury with Yorkshire County Cricket Club. He was giving evidence in front of MPs in Parliament the other day. We're recording this on Wednesday. The testimony was yesterday, Tuesday. Tayo, and I'm sure you'll agree, was pretty shocking. I mean, you watched most of it live, you said.
Yeah.
It was about, an hour of testimony?
Yeah. First up, the select committee heard from and put some questions to Azeem Rafiq, and then Roger Hutton, who was until recently chair of Yorkshire County Cricket Club, he was in front of them, and then Tom Harrison from the ECB. I didn't listen to Tom Harrison. Don't, you know, read into that what you will. It's been a pretty extraordinary 10 days. Well, I suppose it's been brewing for a lot longer, but in terms of the sort of build up to yesterday and to see this story leading, it was the top story in a lot, you know, pretty much most of, if not all of the major news outlets in the UK. You know, it was the top story on BBC News website, BBC Sport, ITV News, et cetera, et cetera. I suppose first and foremost, you know, hats off to Azeem Rafiq, because I wouldn't want to be in front of a select committee talking about anything, because it looks quite an intimidating process. But he spoke.
If we somehow end up in there because of this podcast.
Yeah, it does. No, it looks like a very, very intimidating thing to be involved in. You know, not least when the subject is one which, you know, the people will have very, very strong views on. Some people will have very, very strong views sort of the other way. And, you know, as he talks about, you know, he would have been, sort of, he's been smeared and attacked and kind of tried and sidelined from various parties. So, yeah, I thought first and foremost, you know, obviously full credit to him, because he spoke extraordinarily coherently about the situation and about his experiences very honestly. And you know, obviously he was emotional at times. And yeah, very tough to hear, obviously, and to see so clearly the impact it's had on him and his family through not just some difficult times as a cricketer and, you know, in that circumstance, but also, you know, obviously it's wrapped up in personal tragedy from his family's perspective. So yeah, that was pretty tough to listen back to, wasn't it? The whole thing is kind of swirling, isn't it? It's drawing more and more people in as it goes. You know, there's numerous names from Yorkshire, from the club itself, from, you know, the dressing room, from players to now former players and pundits. And it's moving pretty quickly. So I think, you know, there's probably more to pass, isn't there, before we can probably, be too explicit and be too kind of...
We might have more to say on this next time. As I mentioned, we're recording this on Wednesday, and this is very much a moving story, isn't it? By the time people are hearing about it, it may well have moved on quite a bit. So we might well return to this in more depth next time once the dust has settled. I'm sure this story will continue and should continue to run, but lots more people getting caught up in it now, with Bumble issuing a statement yesterday apologising for some things he said. Obviously, Michael Vaughan under a lot of scrutiny for comments he's alleged to have made. As you say, Tony, a huge amount of credit to Azeem Rafiq. Brilliant work also, it's worth saying, by George De Bell, Cricinfo, actually now of the Cricketer, but doing that work for Cricinfo and others to kind of bring all of this to light and make it into such massive news. As I say, it's been leading news bulletins. You know, it's been leading BBC News for the last few days. It was doing the same last week. And I think I said to you, it bumped the story of the discovery of a COVID pill into second place, which, when you consider, you know, the last 2 years of pandemic, it has to be a big story to do that, you would think. So,
yeah, clearly a lot has gone wrong along the way, hasn't it? Obviously, the incidents and a lot of the experience is going back 5-10 years, but the way it's been handled subsequently is sort of nothing short of appalling, isn't it? And people in authority and you know, the powers that be at Yorkshire trying to just bury it, trying to just kind of gloss over it. And you just think, when you consider, how much of an impact it's had in terms of the news agenda and where it's sat, it's just an appalling look for cricket. And you think the ECB at this stage surely have to be a lot stronger and should have been a lot stronger or should have been involved and taken a lead, because at the end of the day, it's the whole episode. I mean, okay, let's hope it's a turning point, or you know, there's clearly, if it's not a turning point, then that would be extremely sad. But the way it's been allowed to fester and then kind of explode, just extremely sad for the game of cricket in the country. You know, we've talked about it before, and lots of people have talked about the way that communities are, you know, have been marginalised in the game, and the involvement, particularly of black players. You know, obviously there are some high profile British Asian players in the England team at the moment, but overall, you know, it's a challenge that cricket has been either losing, or maybe not right to say shirking away from, because like there are a lot of projects and stuff that but for whatever reason
not succeeding.
Yeah, cricket has really struggled to connect with these communities in you know, who you would say are, they should be sort of part of the bedrock of cricket in the country. So the damage that it's done to that is hard to gauge, isn't it, at the moment?
Well, I mean, the ECB have to be in the spotlight, don't they? Because I think I've seen a few people pointing out that I think this is the third time they've been in front of a select committee hearing in the last few months, which isn't, you don't think is a great sign if you're being called into the select committees. And also, I mean, it remains to be seen whether, you know, is this an issue that is kind of local to one county or is more going to emerge now? How widespread a problem is this? I mean, as you say, Dan, it's completely shocking, and it's hard to get your head around, really, that this kind of stuff is still going on. It feels like a throwback to So yeah, it was a emotional and fairly shocking day yesterday. We will have more to say on it next time, but a remarkable few days for cricket in this country.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from the cricketing authorities' perspective and you know, from Yorkshire as well, you know, given how high profile some of the issues around racial abuse and you know, diversity inclusion have been in particularly in football in the last year or two, it seems mad that the cricket authorities in England and or in certain, you know, certain portions of the cricket authorities either didn't think that these things would sort of bubble over and you know, cricket, the spotlight turn on cricket, or want to confront them and want to deal with them in a more satisfactory, in a more kind of upfront, honest way, rather than just trying to sort of pretend it's not there. There's been a real like what's the word, like dereliction of duty, hasn't there, in so many quarters.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of the shocking things about it, that you know, that they just tried to ignore the findings of the report, and you know, it's beyond turning a blind eye, isn't it? And it's just kind of astonishingly deliberate ignoring of what were major and should have been obvious problems. Cricket very much in crisis in England, you would say, at the moment, which is sad to see. Okay, Tone, well, we are going to talk about some action on the field tonight. We are here to reflect on the T20 World Cup, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the World T20, whatever you want to call it, which came to an end last Sunday in Dubai. Coming into the tournament, I think it's probably fair to say that not many people would have picked an Australia-New Zealand final. And by not many people, I would include me and you. What did you say? India, West Indies, neither of whom got out of the group. I said India, England.
It doesn't look great when you put it like that.
But anyway, we didn't pick it, but that's what we got. We got an Australia-New Zealand final after New Zealand took down the form team England in the first semi-final. I obviously picked England to come out of the group, so just putting that out there. And Australia beat the other form team, Pakistan, in the second semi-final. And it was the Aussies who took the title, becoming the sixth nation to win the T20 World Cup in seven tournaments. Australia won the toss, chose to field. Their odds of winning dramatically fell at that point. And New Zealand didn't get off to a great start. After the 10 overs, they had about, 50-odd on the board. Martin Guptill struggling to get going at the top. But then a terrific innings from the captain, Kane Williamson, 85 from 48 balls, including one of my favourite overs of batting that I've seen for a very long time against Mitchell Starc when he took him for, 20, 24, something like that. Kind of lap shots. It was beautiful to watch. And at that point, I was like, well, they're definitely going to win it. They managed to post 172 for four, which by the standards of the tournament was a pretty good total. But nonetheless, Australia chasing would have been feeling confident. And despite losing Aaron Finch early, David Warner with 53 from 38 balls and Mitchell Marsh, 77 not out from 50, got Australia most of the way there. Warner did fall to bolt, but the game was pretty much over by that point. And Australia won the game by 8 wickets with just over, with 7 balls to spare to seal their first T20 World Cup title. We will talk about the tournament as a whole in a bit, Tane. But first of all, what did you make of this final? Australia worthy winners for you?
I don't think you can take too much away from them. Nor am I that particularly surprised. I don't know. I know you say we didn't pick them to win, but at all. We spoke about them for about 45 seconds.
I was very dismissive on the preview.
So we might have dismissed them. I don't necessarily think it's hugely surprising. You know, just given the openness of T20, you know, back in the day we were talking about T20 being 50-50 or 2020 yes. Is 50-50. That was my...
I seem to remember that. Yeah.
We used that a few times. Trying to think who... It was one of the Crickviz guys.
You didn't say T20 is 50-50. That doesn't work as
no,
well.
No, I know. 2020 is 50-50.
2020 is 50-50, yeah.
I think we should call this the 50-50 podcast. Patent that.
T20 is F50 is what you used to say.
I think I heard one of the Crickviz guys during the tournament talking about how I think he said they've never had a T20 international that started more than about 60-40, as in like wider than, with one team more than 60-40 on to win a match,
right,
in T20 history. I might have got that wrong, but it speaks to what the point I'm trying to make. So it'll do.
But I might have made that up, but...
No, I didn't make it all up. But still... the point being is that you know, any of these sides, well, probably most of the sides starting the tournament, you know, you would have given them a chance of winning it. Clearly, there were teams that we and a lot of people thought, you know, should be considered heavier favourites going into it. Yeah, obviously, Mitch Marsh took a lot of the plaudits for that final, and you know, absolutely fair play. You know, it was a great innings, and clearly given, you know, some of the treatment he's had in some quarters, you know, you say, you know, nice for him. A good riposte, and obviously to be there at the end and see his team home to a first T20 or a first World T20 victory is pretty special. But then you go back to the semi final. Probably the innings, the tournament winning innings as far as Australia are concerned was Matthew Wade in the semi final, because like Australia were right up against it against Pakistan. You know, Pakistan looked rampant, didn't they? Rizwan scored more runs, and then that Fakhar Zaman innings was just, yeah, was a bit ludicrous at the end the way he finished that off. And then Australia were right up against it in that innings. They almost had no right to win that match, and then they, you know, in the end they win it with an over to spare, and there was Stoinis was there as well, but Matthew Wade doing the damage at the end,
three consecutive sixes at the end,
yeah,
to win it.
You know, and likewise on the other side you would say England. Is that me beeping?
I think so. Teddy started saying that when he's waiting for something.
Well, come on, lads.
Come on, lads, he says, yeah. Don't know where he gets it from.
And, you know, likewise, on the other side of the draw, England probably didn't score enough runs, did they, in that semi-final? But again, we're right in the mix. And then, you know, and it's a Darryl Mitchell innings that took them away. So, you know, arguably the two key, sort of key innings of the tournament, Darryl Mitchell and Matthew Wade, two players who you would say... you know, wouldn't be in the sort of top 25 or top 30. Well, maybe they would be, but you know, they wouldn't be anywhere near the batsmen you'd say are the danger men, the outs, you know, the out and out stars. So it just goes to show you, like, you know, how open the format is.
Fairly remarkable thing about this tournament is that, yeah, absolutely, as you say, the key men in the key moments. If you'd said before the tournament who will be the key batsmen in the semi-finals and the final, I think you'd have had to go pretty long way down the list before you got to Matthew Wade, Darryl Mitchell and Mitchell Marsh. And, you know, which is amazing for them. I was going to say so pleased for them. I don't know how pleased I am that Australia have won this tournament. But, yes, particularly in the case of Mitchell Marsh, has obviously had a very tough time with injuries and things like that. And seeing his celebration, how much it meant to him, you know, you have to have a heart of stone,
or heart of English,
yeah, yeah. Heart of
heart of chalk.
English, yeah, heart of roses or something. not to be pleased for him. So yeah, that's amazing. I was thinking about your T20 is fiddy fiddy thing. I'm sort of in two minds about it. Like, in one sense, you're more right with that than ever, and we'll talk about this more in a minute. But with the toss being such a factor in the tournament, because it almost is 50-50. If we go along with that idea that, you know, win the toss, win the game, then it is the flip of a coin. It's literally 50-50. But on the other hand, or I believe you, Tony, even though I suspect you've possibly made it up, that Crick Viz is saying that, you know, that it was never more than 60-40 for any T20. And that therefore, you know, any game of T20 is pretty open and anyone can win it. But actually, if you think about it, if you go through this tournament, were there any shocks, like really shock results? You know, sometimes it was the less fancy team that won, as happened in both semi-finals. But certainly in the group stage, we weren't seeing Namibia beat India or New Zealand. The only big shock of the tournament was Scotland beating Bangladesh on in the very first weekend. And then Bangladesh turned out to be really poor, basically, throughout the whole tournament. So I don't think it's right to say that, you know, that it is a completely level playing field in T20. Yeah, well, we'll talk more about the toss in a second. I was just coming back to the final a little bit. What were you going to say? You put your hand up there.
Yeah.
Sir?
So I'm just trying to find the one result. I guess you could argue that Sri Lanka beating West Indies, based on our pre-tournament predictions, is a shock, or was a shock, which it probably was, although it obviously had come after West Indies had been pretty ragged. So maybe it was, and Sri Lanka, look, in the context of the tournament, it wasn't necessarily a massive shock, but for a pre-tournament, you'd have said
we'd have called that as a shock.
Yeah, that would have been a big shock.
Netherlands would beat Sri Lanka.
It's a good point, though, just the fact that, you know, people say, or that the accepted wisdom is that T20 is the format that will... What?
I thought you were about to say the accepted wisdom is that 2020 is 50-50.
Yeah, it's the accepted wisdom. No, that this is the format that will open the doors to the world, and it gives the lesser teams a better chance. And as you say, in the end, the group stage was probably a bit of a damp squib. Mm.
Yeah, and that's not always been the case. And
squib game. We've
Hang on, I've spoke over that. This is a joke that...
need to deliver that for weeks.
It's a joke that you came up with weeks ago, but just after we recorded the last podcast and texted it to me and was like, why did you not say that on the pod? What do you get paid for?
Also, the whole buzz of Squid Game's died off now, hasn't it? True. So it's too late anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, Squid Game, there you go. You can have that for free. There were quite a few Squid Games in the... In the preliminary round, or in the group stage, whatever they call it, the Super 12.
Yeah, but stranger things have happened, Tone, haven't they? Is everyone still watching Stranger Things?
Yeah.
There's no doubt that T20 is the vehicle to grow the game, and it is more of a leveler than, say, Test cricket. I mean, that's just goes without saying. But, yes, only at least in this tournament, it's not sort of bringing about complete parity. Sri Lanka being West Indies was a shock. Australia beating Pakistan in the semi-final, I would say, was a shock. I was certainly very surprised by that result. And just speaking of Australia, I'm hesitant whether to say this because it's just going to sound like such sour grapes as an England fan. But there is quite a big part of me that is just sort of sitting here thinking, like, how have Australia won this? I just don't think they were particularly impressive in the tournament, and they've come out as winners. And they obviously had that, amazing kind of 15 minutes at the back end against Pakistan and those sixes from Matthew Wade. And then they did play well in the final. They were the better team on the day in the final for sure. But if you rewind a couple of weeks to when England absolutely dismantled them in the group stage, you know, it was like they were playing different sports almost at that point. Perhaps this is because I'm an England fan and I sort of feel this way because it was England that beat them in that way. But it, almost if any team had beaten them in that way in the group stage, it would be hard to kind of square that with the fact they'd gone on to win the tournament. And they were completely written off after that. So in one sense, you know, what a story that they turned it around and came back to win the tournament. Maybe it is sour grapes. Maybe I kind of have my England blinkers on. Maybe I have my sort of very passionate, determined and meticulous anti-Australian bias hat on. I'm sure Australian fans are loving it and are enjoying this tournament win as much as England fans were winning the World Cup in 2019. But it's just, I don't know, just for me, it's a little hard to swallow those images of the Australian players celebrating, because it's like, I'm not sure they've been very good. In terms of who was the best team in this tournament, I still think they'd be quite a way down the list.
Yeah, it's tough to argue with that. I do think there's a slight... The format needs work, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As we all know, all formats need constant work. It just doesn't really feel like there's any momentum to the tournament in the sort of group stage. Like, yeah, it feels a bit strange that probably the two best... England and Pakistan, the two best teams, then just lost in the same final. That was it. Mm. Then one more match and suddenly, as you say, Australia are champions. So it comes out of nowhere a bit, doesn't it?
And that's part of the magic.
I don't know what the answer is. Yeah,
it's part of the magic because it's knockout, it's one-off game, and it means that you can't just halfway through the tournament say, "Well, England and Pakistan have been the best two teams so far, therefore one of them will win it," because that's not how it works. And I don't want that to be how it works. I don't want it to just be a league table. The fact that tournaments have knockout stages is one of the great things about them. So, but just somehow, I just couldn't quite work out how Australia had ended up in the final, and then to win it. I don't know. I mean,
I would argue actually now at this point that the format, if you're going to keep the Super 12 format, you should then have best of three semis and best of three final.
Okay.
Which I don't think would be undoable. Mm. If you played three double headers, three back-to-back double headers as the semi-finals. So you'd have, say, you know, it was Pakistan, Australia, an afternoon game, then England, New Zealand, and then vice versa. Maybe with a, I don't know. We can work it out. We can work it out together. Yeah. Because you almost want, I don't know, I come away feeling like I've not watched enough good cricket in the tournament or like good matches, and that probably actually the three best games or three of the best games were the semi-finals and final, when you had the best teams or the informed sides or the, you know, the sides that had risen to the top playing each other. And, you know, as nice as it was to have Namibia and Scotland, et cetera, involved in the Super 12s, actually, as we said last week, there just wasn't enough good. It wasn't exciting enough for me.
Yeah, well, I agree with that.
So therefore, probably, yeah, if you had best, you know, how excited would that have been? Three, you know, after that first Australia-Pakistan game, which was... It was possibly some of the most exciting cricket at the tournament. Yeah, to then have two more of those potentially.
Yeah, and it does feel like a bit of a missed opportunity somehow that England and Pakistan didn't meet. Not that there's anything anyone could have done about that, but I know what you mean in the sense that, yeah, the best bit of the tournament by far was the knockout stages, because it was finally we were seeing teams in good form playing each other. Australian fans listening to this are going to be absolutely killing themselves laughing, by the way, and we're going to get a lot of emails about this, because it's like, oh, okay, England didn't win, Australia won, and suddenly we have to rework the format. But I don't know. I mean, perhaps part of the explanation for this, like A, for Australia winning, and B, for why we feel a little bit underwhelmed by the tournament as a whole, is the toss. Australia won the toss in six of their seven matches, including in the semi-final and the final. And there was a sense of win the toss, win the game. So only, quote unquote, 29 out of 45 matches in the tournament were won by the team batting second. So that's not that significant. I mean, it is a difference, but still 16 matches were won by the team batting first. So it doesn't feel like completely decisive. But that 45 includes the group stage and some of those Super 12 games that were mismatches, you know, that were involving Namibia and Scotland and so on. Of 23 games between full member nations, 18 were won by the team batting second. So quick maths, only five were won by the team batting first, including all three knockout games. That's obviously to do with the dew in this part of the world and the fact that, you know, the games were especially in the latter stages, were night games for the TV audience in India with the time difference and stuff. It meant that the dew was a big issue, and it was hard for the team fielding second. So yeah, I mean, was it too big an issue, Tony, in the tournament? Do you think that's a big factor here?
Marginally, it's kind of tough to work out if that is the case, then where you go from there. You just accept it, and you know, the next breakthrough in T20 tactics and whatnot is to try and find a way to win batting first. The team's batting second. Obviously, they won more, but also they just found it easier to find the big sixes and the big boundaries towards the death. Like quite a few of those matches towards the end of the tournament, you know, teams were needing 12 and over in the last three, and then suddenly it was like they needed like five off six balls. It was like, yeah, there was those explosive moments, which for whatever reason, I don't know whether it's just maybe the teams batting first sometimes didn't take enough risk or try to hit big enough quickly enough, because you look at England in the semi-final, 166 for four. Perhaps they were just playing a little bit within themselves, whether that was the conditions or whatnot.
New Zealand in the final finished four down.
Four down. I mean, I guess Pakistan against Australia finished four down. I mean, it's tough to argue that, what more Faka Zaman could have done at the end there. But, yeah, were the teams batting first scoring enough runs? If you're finishing four down, probably not. You know, six or seven down for an extra 15 runs, it would have maybe been decisive in all three of those matches.
Yeah, well, as I say, New Zealand only put 50 or so on the board in the first half of their innings. So, you know, that you'd say is where they lost the game. And if they'd managed to get another 25 or 30, it could well have made all the difference. I mean, I think it's always the case in T20 that you probably, all things being equal, you would rather bat second, because just mentally it is easy. I mean, and this goes back to like when you're a kid playing cricket, you generally want to bat second because it's just easier to know what you've got to get, isn't it? when you're batting first, there's just kind of uncertainty about what's a good score on this pitch. You know, so it kind of makes sense that there's always going to be a slight advantage there, but there was way too much of an advantage in this tournament. But it could be that, you know, maybe we don't need to overreact and start thinking about mitigations and changing rules of T20 and having a longer power play batting first and those sorts of things, because it could well be that it's just something local to the UAE and this tournament in particular, and, you know, the time of the year that it was held. And perhaps it's another thing to add to the list of why this might not be a great venue for a global tournament. But it's perhaps not a kind of a fundamental existential crisis for T20, but it was just a bit disappointing.
Obviously, we're off to Australia next year.
We are.
So
brilliant.
So maybe that's the time
to pack my bags.
Get sorted, mate. So let's not rush into any big decisions.
Maybe I'm being too harsh on Australia, Tony. I mean, they certainly put in an excellent performance in the final. Terrific innings by David Warner, Mitchell Marsh,
as well as we from Warner,
mentioned. Great tournament from Warner, kind of answering a few critics, the likes of you and me, possibly. I'm sure that's who he was thinking about.
I don't know if I've been that critical of Warner.
No, I don't think I have either, particularly. But obviously Wade in the semi-final. Josh Hazlewood was absolutely sensational all tournament.
Can I just say about Warner as well? In a way, you know, actually, you know, obviously a lot's made about, you know, all the sort of pre-tournament chat. You know, a lot of it focuses on Babrizam, Josh Butler, Kohli. But actually, and Warner probably sort of slid under the radar a bit, which is kind of mad, given that he is, you know, he probably on his day and by right is one of the best one day batsmen of the century. You know, he's it's actually, you know, again, putting away the rivalry, you know, he's an incredible batsman to watch. Nice to see him do it in, you know, on this stage, and you know, probably was. Overall, he was probably the batsman of the tournament.
Yeah, he's kind of a, you know, one of the sort of definitive T20 batsmen, isn't he? Like, he will go down in the history books with the likes of Chris Gayle, you know, as one of the players, one of the batsmen that really kind of set the blueprint for T20 batting. So yeah, he has had a leaner time of it, but yeah, nice to see. Well, through gritted teeth, nice to see him back to his best in this tournament. And yeah, in the bowling department for Australia, as I say, Hazlewood was fantastic and is, you know, continuing his transformation as a T20 bowler. And given what an unbelievably good Red Bull bowler he is, it's slightly alarming from our point of view that he's becoming just as important in white ball as well. Adam Zampa had a fantastic tournament, much, much better than I gave him credit for in the preview when I said he was one of Australia's weaknesses. And it's, you know, it's quite an experienced group for Australia now as well. Maybe not experienced in playing together. A criticism that I levelled at them in the last episode, that they didn't play that much together. But in terms of individual experience, so Pat Cummins is the youngest member of the team 10 years after he made his debut. Perhaps evidence as well, this Australia success, of the outsized impact of individuals in T20. So this might be a sweeping conclusion off the back of one tournament win, but it could be that the balance and composition of your team is less important in this format than in the other two. You know, it's important, but it's not everything. You know, because Australia's team was—I was going to say a bit of a mess. That might be overstating it, but you know, there were problems with the balance of that team. They didn't. I don't think they. I still don't think they know what their best batting order is. I don't think they know what Steve Smith's role is in the team. They had several players who had very poor tournaments, like Aaron Finch and Mitchell Starc, but a few big performances from individual players carried them over the line in the end. And that is quite an exciting aspect of T20, isn't it? That you don't need that much. You only need a 35 from or a 40 from Matthew Wade in quick time to completely change your fortunes.
Obviously we spoke about Mitchell Marsh before. His six off his first ball in that final was ludicrous.
That was just quite an amazing shot.
Yeah,
there, wasn't it?
Incredible moment. And that, you know, in a way, it's like those kind of things that just sort of that turn the tide slightly. He just sort of, I don't know, picked it up off the middle of the leg, and he didn't really move his feet, but just the hip turn and the pickup, and he just heaved it over square leg for a big six.
Lazy shot. It was a sort of laconic shot.
Looked like he was sort of like, it was like caveman, like just the size, bat swinging. It was quite incredible. I think one thing that commentators have got to go away and do some work on, though, is describing sixes, because they just run out of They've run out of terminology.
Wow.
Yeah. And it, you know, often it's just, it's huge, and it like dribbles over the boundary, or they go, it's massive. It's huge. Well, I can't remember who it was on commentary, but one of the Mitch Marsh sixes, which just cleared the rope. And the commentary was something along the lines of, yeah, he's hit that as cleanly as anyone has ever hit a ball in cricket or in this sport. It's like, no, it clearly hasn't. But it's tough.
Mark Nicholas was very overexcited, wasn't he? The commentary was a real mixed bag. What about New Zealand, Tone? Are they ever going to win a white ball tournament?
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, like, if you'd given them three finals, if you'd said you're going to be in the World Cup final, the Test Championship final, and the World T20 final, you're going to win one of them, I think you'd still take it. I know it'd be disappointing, and you know, obviously 2019 was particularly cruel.
Do you mean they'd have chosen the Test Championship?
No, not necessarily. I think they'd have taken one win out of the three.
You'll win one of these three.
You're in all three finals, and you're going to win one of them.
Right?
Would you take that? Yes, I think they would have done. Yeah, it's a shame that they haven't converted one. Yeah, it's a shame they didn't convert this one.
Yeah. I mean, they did incredibly well to get to the final because, again, for all that, you know, they're not the dark horses anymore or the underdogs. Not many people were calling them to get that far. And they played some really good cricket throughout and obviously were fantastic in taking down England in the semi-final. Incredible innings from Williamson in the final. Lovely Trenty had a good tournament, didn't he? So, yeah, they will be disappointed not to get over the line. But I think unlike the 50-over final, you know, this won't be the one that got away in quite the same sense, will it? Because they were well beaten in the end.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, the more you think about 2019, the more brutal it is as a way to miss out, isn't it? But yeah.
As the dust settles on this tournament then, Tone, what's your final verdict? How will you remember this T20 World Cup? Disappointing.
Live the game, love the game, I guess. So that's, you know, the marketers have done well on that.
Yeah. Just when you're brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
In the morning again. Live the game, love the game.
I did enjoy it. Someone tweeted, you know, a little poll of whether you live the game, love the game, neither or both. I don't know. Do you fall either way? Do you live it or love it?
Probably both, I'd say. What about you?
That's good. Yeah, both, I guess. Yeah,
yeah. I live the game, love the game is probably how I'd put it.
So that's probably how I remember it. I don't think it's been a classic. I mean, yeah, there'll be memorable moments. We said we were very excited about it.
Mm.
Yeah, it came in below expectations for me.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I still enjoyed it. It was still a pleasure to have a global cricket tournament on. Do you know what I mean? It was just on a lot in my house.
Yeah.
Which I like that. And it had been a long time since we'd had a tournament like that. And you know, in the age of a pandemic, in some respects it might seem slightly churlish, or I don't know, like if you go back 18 months when there was no cricket at all, no sport happening anywhere at all in the world, I'd have bitten your hand off for a disappointing T20 World Cup. Do you know what I mean? So it's like to some extent, like this is the first moment that, you know, all teams from all around the world have been able to get together, and we said we'd never take that for granted again.
Yeah, and such a good point. I'm just on my sofa, like stuffing my arse, going, like, "No, entertain me more, like yeah, more, better matches." Yeah. Yeah, like some sort of giant, horrible toddler.
So, yeah, you're just there, like Teddy, going, "Come on, lads!
Come on, lads!" Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's hard to make a case for this being a classic tournament. Very good semi-finals.
The final
threatened to come to life, but in the end, petered out a bit, didn't it? Everything before the semi-finals was pretty underwhelming, and I think, yeah, this is a rubbish venue for a World Cup. The pitches weren't great; very kind of two-paced pitches, which meant we didn't see that many batting fireworks, or not as many as we're used to seeing. I like a low scoring game and I like it when the bowlers are on top, but it wasn't really in the right way. You know, it didn't feel like we were seeing kind of sensational bowling. It was just that the teams were finishing three or four wickets down. They just weren't getting going. And the due factor and the toss and everything. Also, can we talk about the ground announcers?
Yeah, go on.
The DJs. Well, I mean, I don't have much more to say than that, but it was just remarkable. And the final was something else.
What a shot!
Yeah. Well, I say Chris, you say Jordan. Chris! Jordan! Chris! Jordan!
Of course, we've got the roadmap now for the next decade.
Our lives have been mapped out. It's quite exciting. Can you fill us in?
Well, yeah, so obviously it's Australia next year, isn't it? We knew that already, but the ICC have announced the dates from, 24 to 31 or something, which is like stupid futuristic dates.
Ridiculous. The 2350 World Cup is in India. We already knew that.
Yeah.
But we've got the dates for all the tournaments. They're bringing back the Champions Trophy as well.
Back by popular demand. on the World T20 side of things, quite exciting. 2024, jointly hosted in the West Indies and the United States.
We're going.
I think we are going to that.
We're definitely going to that.
So that'd be the first. The first major men's tournament, global tournament held in the US, which is we've been talking about this kind of stuff for years, haven't we? It's quite exciting to see that in paper.
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen. I don't know. Have they kind of given any more detail on that? It's like, because that could mean a number of different things, can it? Like, it could be that it's mostly in the West Indies with a few games in Florida, or it could mean that it's largely in the US with the odd game in Barbados. Do you know what I mean? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, this is true.
What it looks like. But it is quite an exciting prospect.
So then 25, India, Sri Lanka, joint host, 28, Australia, New Zealand, and then 2030, England, Ireland, and Scotland. It's interesting to say that. I mean, clearly the way lots of things are going in terms of major sport is for joint hosting and sort of spreading it around, which probably makes sense. It does kind of undercut that sense of kind of coherence and identity to the tournament a bit, doesn't it? But there we go.
Well, and again, but... Not to just make exactly the same point, but it remains to be seen exactly what shape that takes. Because England, Ireland, Scotland, it could be that there's a couple of games in Ireland, a couple of games in Scotland. But, well, I know you're talking about the T20 World Cup specifically there, and it's nice that it's back on a two-year schedule. That just works better for me. But it's quite cool as well to see the Champions Trophy is going to be in Pakistan, isn't it, in 2025. And also that the World Cup in 2027, the 50-over World Cup, will be in South Africa, along with Namibia and Zimbabwe. South Africa, which hosted every tournament going for 4 or 5 years, I think has now not hosted one since the 2009 Champions Trophy. And it will be 24 years after the World Cup was last there, which is slightly frightening, isn't it? We are getting to very futuristic territory here. But that was cool. Well,
India have, unsurprisingly, have a stake in all three tournaments over the course of the decade. So
plus the 2023 World Cup.
So they've done all right out of it.
Yeah, so they've got the 2023 World Cup and the 2031 World Cup, haven't they? Can we start saying just the last two digits of the year? Are we at that point now where I can just say World Cup 23? I don't have to say World Cup 2023. It's going to save me a lot of time.
It's a great question.
Because when we were kids, it was all World Cup 94, Euro 96. But obviously once we got to 2000, it ruined everything. But I feel like now we can go back to that.
So I agree, definitely. 24 then. When do we start? Is it 21 now?
It's 21 now. It still feels a bit weird somehow, doesn't it? But I'm gonna push for it. I'm going to push for it. And I'm starting now on this podcast. We're going to bring this to an end in just a second time, but very quickly, any favorite moments from this tournament? You mentioned that Mitchell Marsh six in the final. Would that be near the top? I said on the last episode, Joss Butler's run out against Sri Lanka, as in the run out that Joss Butler affected, would be up there for me. Shaheen Afridi bowling. The Mohammed Rizwan pickup, he did this a few times, but that shot he plays, which is just, without kind of moving his feet, just the swivel of the hips, a bit like the Mitch Marsh six in the final, but he played it several times throughout, was a thing of beauty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anything else coming to mind? He's struggling.
Nothing's leaping to mind. let me think. Which is the game that Scotland won?
Against Bangladesh.
Yeah, that was quite something. That was a good moment. You have to come back to you on that.
I'm sorry to ask you such a difficult question.
Just on another cricket news, why are New Zealand and India playing a T20I today, by the way?
I just opened Cricket Info and it's live. New Zealand are 110 for 3, first T20I in Jaipur. I mean, come off it.
Bizarre. And also that England are now going to play 70 20Is in Pakistan next year.
Oh, really?
They've just added another two. Just for good measure.
Oh, dear. Yeah. There's a lot of work to do, isn't there? A lot of work to do. Well, we'll be covering it all, of course, on the podcast. But that's going to be it for the World Cricket Show this time. Have you enjoyed this one, Tone?
Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah.
You've got to shoot off now?
Yeah, it's been a joy. Yes, I do.
Yes, I definitely do. Yes. He says, lacing up his shoes. Well, I've got to go as well. Got to go get my son from nursery. So we'd better bring this to an end. But if you enjoy the podcast, then do get more involved on the internet. We're on, you know, Meta, Twitter, Instagram. Send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com as well. But until next time, that's it from me. That's it from Tony.
Anything yeah, well, we've got the Ashes soon, haven't we?
Yeah, well, we're going to
be back. Really soon.
Let's have a planning meeting at some point because we need to book in a date. Is it December the 8th it starts? Yeah, it's really exciting. We will be coming right at you, right up in your grill. We'll be right up in your grill piece with an Ashes preview in a week or so's time. I'm excited for that.
Love the game, love the game.
Stay in school, everyone. See you soon.
Cheers.
Bye-bye for now. I can smell your fear. Ba da da ba ba, 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 ba da da ba ba. This should be interesting. How does this sound?
Yeah, I mean, it sounded pretty good.
Is it
quite loud?
Loud?
I'll just give that a bit.
It might need to be more like 6, actually.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, pretty good. How's pretty that? Good, mate.
Kind of in the sweet spot. The magic
pretty
6.
Pretty good.
The magic 6.
Sweet 6.
Magic sucks. The magic sucks.
How many of those are we going to get today?
Absolutely frenetic.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.